change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. I'm your host, Mickey Desai. Very happy today to be speaking to a new friend across the pond, Simon Town. Simon runs a nonprofit in the UK. Simon seems like a very cool guy and has the art of networking down to a science, although that may be a little bit too reductionistic. How are you doing, Simon?
Very well, thank you, Mickey.
What time is it there?
It's 4 p.m. I've just had a nice day of walking around the coast in the UK. We've had a summer of all one day, so.
Excellent. I was wondering if you were suffering the extreme temperatures that I've been hearing about.
By extreme temperatures in the UK, you mean anything above freezing, right?
Well done. That's good. So tell us about the nonprofit that you run, first of all.
So my nonprofit is called Roots of Yggdrasil. Don't try and spell it when you're sober, never mind when you're drunk. And what we do is we work with disadvantaged and rural communities around the UK and help improve the health and well-being through online exercise videos, local exercise classes, and we work with people primarily with pre-existing medical conditions.
How does it work? Well, let's start from the big picture. How did you put it all together?
Oh, it happened by accident. I'm just really stubborn. And like most countries, our nonprofit sector, for us, if we call it the third sector, there's a lot of funding issues where projects start running out of money and then the project's closed. So I set this organization up as a social enterprise. We have something called a community interest company, which is a legal designation between charity and registered business. So with us, there's different formats for our nonprofits. And the way that we developed ours was one where we can sell educational courses and work with companies to help with their well-being and all those kind of things so that we could provide long-term access to the services that traditionally run on a set period of time, say 10, 12 weeks, then close and never turn up again.
Can you provide an example of what that work looks like? How do we make that more personal, put an actual face on it?
So an example of this would be a lady who goes to one of our classes, one of our online classes, and she has arthritis in her hands, rheumatoid arthritis, and for 5 years she hasn't been able to actually close her hands. And after spending 10 weeks on our program, she's now able to actually hold a steering wheel again and make a fist. And I'll send the clip through to you after this, Mickey, because it's something that you might find interesting.
Yeah.
And we'll also send through the booklet. I think I've already sent you a copy.
Yeah.
Which teaches you the same routine she's done. So anyone you know who's listened to this who wants it can have a copy of that booklet. If you know anyone with arthritis, they can use that to try and rebuild the dexterity within their hands.
Yeah. No, I'm looking forward to it, and we will certainly share that with the audience. So basically the product, I put the word product in quotes, the product that you're offering to your stakeholders is education, classwork, materials that they can read to help build their own coping strategies and improve the quality of their life.
Yes, but our products are very strange. So the one that we've got going live in the next few weeks is a LinkedIn course, of all things. And the price point is based initially, there's an organization called Tony P Networking in Chicago. And they've been kind enough to work with us for the first launch to get some people through. So we'll have an offer going on with that. But the idea is that our networking costs, I've got Asperger's, my business partner who's helped me develop the course has got Asperger's, and we've both got different ways of thinking. And he's data orientated, systems orientated. So what he's done is he's put together his part of the course where you go through all the how to use LinkedIn, all the this is where you find this, this is how you do this, this is how you improve your reach. But my background was behavioral sciences and persuasion psychology and all the open questions that you learn through personal training. So my part of the course is storytelling of all things. So it teaches you how to turn it into a story and use it as a one-page membership acquisition plan to attract new people into your organization. And then the other courses that we're working on is an arthritis course. That'll be coming out later on this year. And we also have a corrective exercise course, which teaches you how to identify muscular imbalances and help correct problems such as neck pain and back pain.
So I have many questions. First of all, is is, and you know, obviously you're saying in the UK, third sector works a little bit different. How do you fund the operation?
Through our courses. And basically we don't, so in nonprofits, and I hate the word nonprofit because it gives you the wrong idea. In the UK, one of the ways that we refer to this now is profits with purpose. Because if you don't make money, you can't support people. So the way that we're unique compared to a lot of other organizations is that all of our revenue comes through selling services and products to either people or companies. Even our classes that we have, they're a token price of £5. So what, $7 for a class? And the reason behind that is because we found that when it was free, people wouldn't come because they didn't give it any value. But as soon as we started charging the £5 mark, then it was the point where people started to value it enough to come along. And you think, well, you're a not-for-profit and you're trying to charge people to come to these classes. But every single one of our classes still runs at a loss, and it always will do, because you've got to pay for hall hire, you've got to pay for travel expenses, you've got to pay the wages, and then we provide a cup of tea, because we're English, of course, and a biscuit.
So, sorry, all of a sudden I'm craving tea and biscuits. You said something that I want to revisit, which is you're operating at a loss. How then do you sustain the operation? Or the classes run at a loss, at least.
So the way that we sustain the operation is by selling our online courses and selling our services to companies. And when it comes to these kind of things, it means that you can then grow faster and you can become more self-sustaining. Now, the other side of things with our non-for-profit is we have our Facebook page, which, again, you will never be able to spell it. And we put free videos out there every day for people who've got medical conditions. And it's all exercises that you can do at home. And the way that we've worked everything out with online PDFs, again, we'll distribute PDFs for free to people who want them. Any nonprofits that want them and their contactors, we'll happily send them through with your branding on them. And the reason behind this is that we want to increase our reach and help people. Because the fitness industry, as you all know, is one of those industries where everything is behind a paywall. And I like to study the fitness industry and look at a lot of the big guys out there doing it, and I'm not going to mention any names. But what they're doing isn't rocket science. And when they sell you these bespoke programs, you can put those together in 5 minutes when you know what you're doing. So the way that I got back at my own industry, because I hate the fitness industry, even though I've worked in it most of my career, the way that I decided to do it instead was everything that they charge for, we put out for free. And then everything that everyone else charges a lot for, we put out at a reduced price, or we sell to companies rather than individuals. The other side of things, for example, when it's our arthritis course, it's 101 home exercises for arthritis. And the difference between that course, when that comes out, and any other course that the other trainers are selling, is that we want to run a course where it teaches you about the disease. It teaches you how to write the routines yourself so you don't have to buy anything again. And then it gives you all the exercises with the teaching points and the benefits that they have so that you can use those as your building blocks to start with. And then moving forwards, you can look up new exercises and start implementing them into the routines yourself. Because my firm belief is that education is the best way to deal with these things. If you know the benefits of doing something, you're more likely to do it. If you know how to take the basics and then build on top of that, then that is more valuable to you because you might learn it yourself and then have 5, 6, 7 other people who would benefit from your knowledge within your group.
Precisely. So related to the idea is that you're taking your own content, you're taking your own class and you're taking your own series content and then repackaging that to sell to other for-profit entities. Is that correct?
Yes. So what we do with for-profit entities, we do affiliate marketing because we can't afford a sales team. And for example, with our LinkedIn course, when that is released properly, it will be about $1,200 because it's very comprehensive and there's been a lot of work going into it and it's been built from a scientific principle. But we're a non-for-profit, so the way that we see things, or profit with purpose, is that we can't afford a sales team, so we'll let other people sell it as well and get their cut from it. And the difference between the way that we sell it and other affiliate marketers sell it is, if you're a private individual selling it, you can get a 20% commission for every one that you sell. But if you're a non-for-profit and you want to sell our services on, we give you your affiliate link and you get half.
Interesting.
And the reason that we thought that was that we're a small company based in a small town in Scarborough. My hometown that I live in now has about 60, 70,000 people. And well, because of the way that we've done everything with COVID and gone online, we've reached 1.3 million people in just over a year.
Oh my goodness.
We're in 6 continents out of 7, but I think it's going to be a bit of a stretch to find someone in Antarctica. So I might have to find a way of getting down there.
There must be someone with arthritis in Antarctica.
Just a letter to the North Pole.
Right.
And then hopefully have them redirected down to the South.
Right. So the affiliate marketing thing makes a lot of sense. That I was wondering initially if you had to sign or had, if any of these other for-profit people, for-profit companies had to sign something like a non-compete or didn't want you as a nonprofit to sell cheaply the thing that they're going to turn around and sell expensively. And I was wondering about the legality of that and if they had any objections to you, continuing to sell the things at a reduced cost, selling the same product at a reduced cost. But affiliate marketing, I think, is the way to answer all those questions. They simply agree to be an affiliate and they make that link work to their benefit.
That's the way that we've been doing it, and it seems to have the least resistance. And yeah, I'm a firm believer in following the path of least resistance.
Sure, absolutely. Absolutely. Let's switch gears here for a moment, if you don't mind, and let's talk about networking. Why is networking so critically important, and how does a person get to be good at it?
Okay, well, one, we're doing a course on networking as well. Sorry, but this is definitely not a sales thing. So with me, networking is how I've got to where I am today. And this is the thing that all nonprofits need to learn, in my opinion. Networking is our strong point, and we've been doing it for decades without us even knowing. For example, if you're sat there now running your nonprofit, I bet you can name 5-10 people within your community or within your state that other people wish they knew. And you become the guardian of all the contacts, because your nonprofit will always be cash poor, but you will always be contact rich. So the way that I built my contact list personally is I work with nonprofits as closely as I can in a way that supports the nonprofit, because each of them has got 1-2 patrons that my clients, because I also do professional networking, but my clients then know that they need to meet that person. But because as a nonprofit, you're the hub of a group of people, you can use that to your strength. So, for example, if you know someone who is a local lawyer with a good reputation and you say to other people, by the way, this is a local lawyer with a good reputation and I know that this is the guy that you're looking for, and make those paths easier, they become more likely to want to support your nonprofit because you've added value to them. And every company in your community, in your state, even in your country, if they work closely with nonprofits, you can become the signposting service and link everyone in together, which makes you much more valuable to your community than just the people you're supporting. And suddenly the business world around you has an interest in keeping you up and running because you're the guys that are facilitating their business.
Doesn't the networking take a great deal of time?
Yes and no. And there's a beautiful system called Lunch Club that I've just started using where you can get 3 things a week. And the people you meet on there are amazing. And I've met a lot of charities on there that have dedicated networkers. But every time you run a charity event or a fundraiser, that's a networking event. Every time you get someone's contact details or they reach out to you, that's networking. Networking is done properly is really easy, because all you need to do is know who they are, what they do, and what they're looking for. And then when you find someone else and you learn who they are, what they do, and what they're looking for, and the two things link together, you make that link. And any of you who've got a CRM or even access to Excel or something like that, you've got your own databases. All you have to do is make a note of 2-3 key things. I have 4 pillars of connectivity with people. I always link them together, whether they've got a lot of knowledge that they want to share with each other. So it could be one's an IP lawyer and one's a guy who's coming up with a new idea. There's a lot of crossover there in skill sets.
Yep.
The other one would be partnerships where they can work alongside each other. So say you've got a steel mill, and then down the road you've got an organization that make another alloy, and both of them are trying to sell to the same clients but in a different part of the market. By introducing the owners of those organizations together, they can work together to position themselves to be stronger within the market. And then there's the good old-fashioned qualified leads, which was someone who has the means and desire to buy a service, and then linking them to the person that provides what they're looking for. That, to a lot of people, is how business is done. That's just general referrals. But the fourth one I have, which is the most important to me, is reciprocity, which is that I always make sure that a relationship that I spread the seeds for is something that benefits both parties, where they can support each other going forwards.
You know, I think here in the States, the word that I've heard that describes what you're talking about is stewardship. You know, you have to steward your relationships with all your networking contacts. And that, to me, is sort of a difficult game for a lot of nonprofits to play, especially when nonprofits here in the States are, I should back up a second and say that the person for many nonprofits who does the most outreach in some ways is perhaps the development directors, the fundraisers, the fundraising executives for a nonprofit. And on the one hand, this is not entirely true, because obviously the people who help with marketing and outreach are doing a lot of networking themselves. But you're right. I think the CRM becomes the backbone for maintaining those relationships. But the question I have that I'm trying to build up to here is, once I make that contact, once I know that I've met a fellow named Simon and Simon has XYZ interests, and I'm keeping that in the back of my mind, and maybe 6 months later, I'll meet someone who also has XYZ interests, so I will hook them up with Simon. What happens in the 6 months in between? I'm not just dropping the ball and simply not talking to you during those 6 months, am I?
So you can actually do that. You'd be surprised how often that works.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone would rather you take time and send someone 6 months later, because it shows you're thinking of them. The way that I try and do it myself is that I'll send a couple of people every month, one way or another. And when you have four or five pillars that you class as, well, connectivity,
mm-hmm.
then what happens is that you'll find those people much more often. Say you've got four people going out meeting people, and they're not doing it as Simon's done this. They're doing it as your organization's done this. And then you just have one person within the organization whose role, as part of what they're doing, business development person normally, is to find out who other people have met that's interesting, make a note of that, and then say, okay, we'll send them through this general email that we're all using, and then send them out to everyone else. So that it could even be, for example, connections at nonprofit Snapcast. And the entire role of that is, you say, when you sign up to our list, so when we meet with you, what we will do is we will keep an eye out of the people that you're looking for. We will ask you four simple questions. What would you see as a valuable relationship? And make a list of that, build it up in the background, and then you'll find very quickly that if you've got two, three fundraisers asking someone every day, there will be crossovers in at least three of those things every day. Then what you do is you go, okay, well, these ones meet 75% of what they're looking for. That's a good contact. These ones meet 25%, so it's not the best contact, unless it's something that's very specific to what the other guys need, which is normally the qualified lead one. And by doing that and just sending emails out once, twice a week, even if it's just once a month, some of the relationships that I've got, I'll talk to the person once every two or three months, and we'll just have a catch-up. And there's a lady called Christine Smith in New York, in Albany area. And she's done a very clever way of doing this. And what she does is she has four to four little pods. Mm. So she sets up an hour meeting with four people. So this is a very clever way as a nonprofit that you can do it. You think of the people who've got things in common. And every month you set up a four to four pod where one of your members is in there with three people who've got crossovers with each other that might not know each other, so that they can network together and keep you in the contact. And your entire role is to just basically be the master of ceremonies for that little conversation. But if you're inviting people to events anyway and getting newsletters to keep them engaged, I'd say that you're already doing more than most networkers out there.
Interesting. I think you're right. Thank you. The next question I have for you is, how expensive is it to provide biscuits and tea for four people with some regularity?
Well, you can do it online now, thanks to Zoom.
Very true.
So you don't even have to have them bring, you don't have to provide your own biscuits and tea.
Yggdrasil is from Norse mythology, isn't it? It's not a UK thing. It's a Scandinavian Norway thing, right?
Yeah, so Yggdrasil is the tree of life from Norse mythology. It incorporates the nine gnomes of Norse cosmology. There are nine elements of fitness, nine elements of well-being, and nine elements of diversity. Yggdrasil has three roots. It's also called the hanging tree, where Odin hung himself for 9 days and nine nights in the search of knowledge. And amongst that knowledge was the knowledge of healing and writing and of the runes. And in Norse mythology, it also happens to be the central area where the gods meet on a daily basis to discuss the topics in open discussion. And while talking in open discussion, it's a safe place where you can exchange ideas without fear of reprimand.
Fascinating. And I was wondering if that's why you picked the, did you pick the name or did you pick the mythology to work off of?
I wanted to call my company Roots because I wanted to start roots within the community. Turns out that was a film about slavery.
Yes.
Yes. Being from the UK, that wasn't the top of my mind, but I did the good old-fashioned Google. That popped up and I was going, oh no.
Right.
Then I thought, okay, well, the Tree of Life. And then there was a tragic event with a shooting in the Tree of Life synagogue.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, no, can't do that either. And I didn't want to step on anyone's toes or basically offend anyone with that one. So I thought, okay, I live in Scarborough, which is Yorkshire, so Jorvik. Anyone who's watched Vikings will know what I'm on about. But Scarborough used to be called Skarsberg, which meant stronghold in Old Norse. So I thought, okay, where does the Tree of Life come from? There's in multiple mythologies, it's in almost all of them. But the one that I Googled, when Tree of Life and Yorkshire, I just put them together, and that became Yggdrasil, because it took me to the Old Norse side of things. So I was like, okay, this is going somewhere. I looked at Yggdrasil as a company name, and that just happened to, well, it was the worst thing ever. That was a brand of theme parks. So, okay, well, it has three big roots, looked into the mythology a bit more, knew it incorporated everything that I wanted to have my company be about. So, and okay, roots of Yggdrasil then.
There you
no
go.
No one's going to have that.
Right. Right. And it works beautifully. I think the symbolism is fantastic. It's certainly a name that fosters conversation and gets people talking. I think that's great.
And no one can pronounce.
No one can pronounce it, right.
And that's the thing, and this is another piece of advice for any nonprofit. If you have something that's a talking point where they go, what does that mean? Or how do you say that? You've got them.
Yeah, that's brilliant. It's actually a really brilliant strategy. Simon, we are out of time. Are there any parting words of advice you would have for our listeners today?
Simple. Don't compete with the other nonprofits in your area. See how you can support each other and what answers you can provide to each other. Because you're both, well, not both, everyone's facing the same issues. If you can work together to find out how each of you are solving them, what's working and what's not working, you can save each other time and resources. And by working as a team, suddenly all the funding issues will start to go away because you're actually able to provide something much more solid within the community. And we have a thing in the UK where you can go for funding as multiple organizations for a project or for something to do. Mm-hmm. So if you could work together to put together, say there's five of you that are all small nonprofits and you all want to work together on a project and you're all very good at different things, what you will find is that between the five of you can actually do more than some of these large national nonprofits because you know the communities, you've got all your different reputations, you've now actually got more people and resources behind you than they do in the area. Mm-hmm. But you can actually go for the big pots of funding.
Yeah, and stronger together than separately. I think that makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
if a listener wanted to write to you, learn more about what you do or get some advice, how would they, you suggest they get in touch with you?
So if you wanted to get a hold of me, it'd be through info@rootsofidrasil.co.uk. And if you wanted to find us on Facebook, it's Roots of Idrasil CIC. And I'm telling you this now, there is no one else out there that's going to be Roots of Idrasil CIC. And the other thing on there is some sort of like a group of people who are some pseudo-religion. That's not us. We're not druids.
Right.
We're the guys below them that have got a picture of a guy with a wheelchair.
Excellent. And we'll be sure to include the website in our show notes. Again, Simon, thank you for taking time on this Saturday to do this episode with me. I really appreciate it.
No problem, Nikki. Anytime.
This has been The Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.
The Snapcast is a production of the Nonprofit Snapshot. Please visit us at nonprofitsnapshot.org to learn more about our consulting work and the ways we can help your organization continue to make the world a better place.